Hello and welcome to the First Impressions podcast. My name's Chris John Riley, and together with my co-host Martin McKay, we'll be talking to presenters at the upcoming FIRST conference taking place in Denver, Colorado between June 14th and 19th, 2026. We look forward to seeing you at the conference, and now we join our interview in progress. This time on the show, I'm lucky enough to be sitting down and talking to Vijay Sarampalli, Principal Engineer at CERT Coordination Center, and Christopher Cullen, Vulnerability Researcher at CERT Coordination Center. They're going to be giving a talk at the upcoming FIRST conference in Denver, Colorado, From CVD to Secure Releases, Automating Security from Source to Releases. Welcome to the show, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
It's a pleasure. I've been looking forward to this one because it's something that's very close to what I've been living for many, many years. So maybe you can give the people listening a little bit of a breakdown about what you're going to be presenting on at the upcoming conference.
The presentation that we're going to work off from is basically an idea that started somewhere in early 2020 when we were looking at a number of open source projects, vulnerabilities that are being reported to us, and many of them would become a discussion in a public forum before release, and many of them will go unpatched for sometimes, I believe the average is 14 days at that time. They'll remain unpatched before an exploit or something comes out. Then there's a panic and there's a patching. So to avoid this pattern, we basically started asking the researchers to submit, if they have a patch, let's just start with a patch and try to secure this. At the same time, GitHub was doing something creative with their GitHub security advisory. So we partnered with them. The journey has been from that time to today, where we are able to look at different ways of getting involved very early in a project to close the gap between when CVD finishes and the patch goes out, how fast we can be, how reliable we can be, how we can automate the whole sequence of events, and how we can impact all the way to the supply chain.
So in these cases, we're talking about open source components, open source platforms?
For most part, yes. There are one or two cases where we've handled a reverse engineered portion of software or for firmware where we tried to do a similar thing. It's not been as effective, but when it's an open source, it's been much more easy for us to basically almost automate the cycle of us getting involved early to not only understand the vulnerability, patch it, and hit the whole distribution cycle of how it's getting released as NPM packages or PyPI or Conda or other ways which the software is getting distributed through the pipeline.
So my section of the presentation will be kind of more case studies. It'll specifically be around a recent case that we had affecting the AI platform called SGLang. We released three vulnerabilities, and throughout the course of that coordination process, we basically hit on all the different things that Vijay and many of the other members of the staff have been trying to work on through this sort of CBD process of addressing these concerns with open source software. So it's a really good case study of showing like, hey, these are the types of challenges that we run into when we're attempting to do coordination. Here are the ways that we tackle them. Here are the ways that, like, you know, some other people have kind of stepped up, stuff that we've learned. And here's how we think that they're going to change in the future and what we're doing to kind of address some of the burgeoning concerns that are coming out in this sort of field, especially when it comes to AI.
So, I mean, AI is its own special situation now as we see that becoming more and more in the news around not only finding vulnerabilities, but also exploiting vulnerabilities. I guess diving straight in on that aspect of it, my understanding is that a lot of AI models right now are very good at finding those vulnerabilities very quick, very good at writing exploits for those, but aren't necessarily translating that same speed to the patching aspect of it, which I guess speaks to your gap that you're seeing between here's a vulnerability, how long does it take to actually find a patch for this?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's not that different from the human problem we had in the past. We had a very similar problem in the past. Rand Research put out some notes on vulnerability. How long does it take to discover a vulnerability? How long does it take to reliably exploit a vulnerability? They targeted really complex ones where patching took longer than they expected. So their research took about a month of really high-tech, high-skilled exploit developers to find a vulnerability in a good-sized project, let's say like OpenSSL. That would be a good example of a sizable project. It took them about 22 days to write the exploit, and most of the time, patching took 180 days or more, and didn't follow the 45 or 90-day disclosure patterns that we want. So we're not seeing it that different for AI, general AI. Finding vulnerability Mythos and others that are coming in the news, they're very quick. CodeMender, that quite a bit Google has been working on, it has been very painful to write good patches and try to get the vulnerability actually completely closed. You could do a workaround and mitigate, but that's the same problem as not doing anything, because 24 says more complex exploits to come out, you know. So it's the problem very easily translates, even if you go to AI, problem still exists, that patching and automating patching is actually much harder than finding and attacking it.
Yeah, and I can follow up kind of from the case study example side. So in that project, that SGLang project, we kind of had the same sort of issue where you've got this kind of insecure, it's well known that using pickle.loads, you know, pickle files is insecure. So combined with the context of the rest of the case where SGLang as part of the vulnerability will bind to kind of all network interfaces that it has access to, definitely another insecure method. You've now basically opened up the product to getting RCE straight away, dropping a pickle file right in there on this endpoint that is designed to take these pickle files. So on the kind of addressing your point there on patching it, one of the things that we did during the process was I had opened a security ticket up to the maintainers with a suggested patch to address this using MSGPack for the deserialization process, which is much more secure than pickle.loads. And kind of one of the issues was that because of the way that SGLang handles these files, the data structures that get passed around after the fact also need to be handling that kind of the data structures that get deserialized properly after with MSGPack. So there's a lot of extra work that has to go into the full patching process. So we can close one part of the loop, but making sure the rest of the product also follows is one of the challenges that kind of comes along. And I think that kind of speaks to one of the points you're talking about where it's easy to find the vulnerability, but much harder to patch it and make sure the product is still working as intended after the fact.
Yeah, it brings back some memories a few years ago. I forget the exact details. It was a Java issue that came out shortly before Christmas. And I remember everyone's running around trying to find, oh, here's a patch for it. They were sharing patches through. And in a past life, we were reviewing some of the patches. And I believe we received three patches and we bypassed all three of them. And it was like, well, the speed of the patch was so desperate, so quick that it wasn't a full view of what the actual vulnerability was. And even fixing the actual vulnerability itself ignored some of those side aspects that were like, yeah, this also affects other areas that we haven't necessarily looked at exploitation, but it also uses the same kind of issue. So speed is not always, you know, was it more speed, less haste, is the old saying. And I think that, you know, we're very much entering that era of exploiting something is the easy bit. Now fixing it's the hard bit. It always has been that case, but it's always been a little bit more even. And I think that certainly that end-to-end point that you're talking about in your presentation is a lot more of a longer journey than the finding and exploiting of an issue.
Yeah. I'll just add one idea that we wrote down. Of course, you know, hindsight is 2020. There's even more things we can write down. When I wrote down the blog in 2020, the idea was we had at least three principles we'll hit when we want to automate the patch. One is, first of all, patch clearly fixes the vulnerability, clearly isolates and finds the source weakness and not a workaround, not the other problems we had where it's an encoding problem, then we just do a different encoding at the beginning and then keep basically breaking down. So going to the source where the problem is, like an SGLang example. The second one is we write test cases that actually ensures none of the functionality is broken. All the things like GitHub workflows help a lot with that. And the last one is we honor the developer's modality of coding. He has a way of thinking about code, and he's very disturbed when you give him AI code that writes down very either verbose or very quick single line stuff that he doesn't understand. Therefore, we got to basically offend the developer in the long term, not help him maintain it if the developer's engaged, especially. So those three principles we wrote down. There's definitely more to capture, but I think this idea, the log4j story you're talking about, and such really bring out this problem of almost breaking the first principle. We really don't go after the true vulnerability and its weakness, and we don't provide test cases to show how it is actually solved. So test cases comprehensively show both failed and success test cases, where some new patch doesn't break traditional functionality that you actually included as your capability.
I completely blanked on the phrase log4j. I think it's PTSD, to be honest, from many of those experiences.
Sure, yes.
Yeah.
I remember log4j quite vividly.
Yes, as many of us do. Some of the notes that you shared on your talk, you know, that desire to push left and really to bring a little bit of more functionality and speed into that patching process, and then helping it to go from patching of a vulnerability all the way through to being able to solve the issue, rebuild, redeploy, get it pushed out and get it available on PyPI or NPM or wherever that is. I mean, it's the option that I think we need to follow, push left, get things, you know, further down the line. Is it something that's going to work for most open source, or are we still in a situation where there's a heavy uplift to get open source on the right kind of platforms where this kind of push left is going to work?
Yeah, it's the open source software still, at the end of the day, seem to be converging into some modes of delivery that they still feel is the best way to get out. People really getting a source code, building it, is becoming less and less, slowly disappearing. Even C code is coming as complete modules and complete SO files. So I think that problem is a little bit less as we enter the future, and the way people consume software, especially AI people who consume software, are using mostly package managers. It's very dynamic, very fast, Dockers, containers, and subsystems like that. And then PyPI is a big one, Conda, NPM. So that mechanism is forcing them to move into platforms like GitLab, GitHub, all these other ones that have been Bitbuckets, and even old GNU Savannah has come back to life because of some of the C programs are coming back. You know, like the CUDA, whole CUDA library helper stuff is coming back through. Some of them I saw even in SourceForge, amazingly, which I thought had died completely. So they're coming back to some convergence of where they're putting their software and how it is getting out. Git is really popular compared to SVN and other ones that existed, Mercurials. So there is some hope there of standardization, which helps a little bit of the platforms and the ways in which we can provide patches is somewhat understandable. But the volume is too big. It's just growing every day. I think Cullen's generation is going to be living with this. By the time I retire, it's going to be so much software and the number of human beings that is just going to keep growing, you know.
Bit of a meta comment that I kind of think we're in a little bit of a hump here. I'm sure you guys have, you know, heard developers, bug bounties, you know, a lot of large coordinators are kind of shutting down or trying to limit their incoming reports just because they're getting so many from these AI. And it's like some of the quality could be, you know, a little all over the place. And I think that kind of same thing is sort of happening within the open source community. And I think what'll kind of happen is towards sort of the other end, when these kind of, you know, weaker links can kind of get shaved off, you'll probably end up with something sort of looking like standards kind of on their own. And then it'll be kind of our work to kind of push that left, you know, to kind of hit to the target that we're looking at. But right now it is a bit daunting. It is a bit bold, but I'm going to be optimistic and think that once sort of things can kind of get over this hump of the large explosion, like, you know, people finding AI to like discover all these voles, people trying to make patches that aren't quite hitting the issues, not understanding what's going on. Once we hit that other side, things will hopefully be a lot better. But that's just my hope for this. So I'm going to stick with that.
It's always good to have a positive outlook on things. And I think And I think at various points, we've had large challenges that we've come together as an industry to partially solve and then ignore for many decades, like SQL injection. So, you know, we never really solve things as an industry. We just solve them until there's no money in it anymore, and then we move to the next thing. But I think we do make strides to make things slightly better along the way. So I have hope. Looking at your talk at the upcoming FIRST conference, what are you looking for people who are attending? What do you expect people to leave understanding at the end of your talk?
Yeah, I would say there's quite a few CVD communities there. There's PCERTs there. All of them need to basically look at this modern approach of getting very early a connection to their patching system. We talked about this to many of the big guys like Microsofts and Googles and Intels. If they're going to have a bug bounty program and they're not going to have connection to their developers, that is basically going to have the same problems that we see in the open source world. So we want them to think about connecting these dots towards delivery of software as late in the process possible. In the CVD, we have these cycles we see through which the process go through, from discovery, reporting, triaging, remediation, to public awareness and deployment. And if you're not aware of deployment and where it's getting released and these coordinators are working in that center section, you may still be basically breaking the way the software is released. So that's our hope, that the PCERTs look into this, look into integrating to their deployment channels as quickly as possible. NVIDIA that are putting out CUDA libraries, there are going to be bugs in it. All the frameworks that are coming in for basically enhancing GPUs, if you don't know the deployment methods in which this is getting delivered, your PCERT is not going to really be successful. We talk about a PCERT, and we talk about other coordination centers like JPCERT, say, and many other CERT coordination centers that are coming up, including bug bounty platforms, how they understand all the way to delivery, how the software is getting out, and how they understand very early to pull patches from the reporter, from the researcher, from the finder, to kick off the process. Not kicking off the process without an understanding of what it takes to patch this will make it very difficult to really evaluate embargo, all these problems that we've seen in the past. So that's our hope for people who come in, that that PCERTs really take this on and the CVD handlers really start considering this as a good life cycle, start basically seeding the idea of the early discovery phases. We encourage researchers to come with a patch, come with a solution, and understand the attack they are doing, understand the environment they're attacking.
And so for my side, I think I'd like to have attendees walk away with kind of some more examples of the things that we hope for them to implement. So for example, you know, if you're a PCERT and you're going to take in the things that we're kind of suggesting, the case study is supposed to prove, hey, this is like a real case that we had. These are some of the things that we missed. These are kind of the things that got lost in translation, and here's what we learned. Open source communities can have a lot of different, you know, kind of things that go back and forth, and a lot of stuff can be missed. And that's kind of what happened with this case. And it ended up working out. But the point of the case study is to show, like, hey, you know, when you're implementing this, you may come across these types of issues. And here's how we dealt with it. And here's how you might come across, you know, similar issues in the future and how you may deal with them yourself.
I think there's a lot to be learned from how people have done things wrong in the past. It's like some things they've missed. It's all too much like success story work, but to come at it from a like, hey, this was wrong and this is how it would have been better if we did it better is always a great message, I think.
Yeah.
So is there anything that I haven't asked that you want to dive into?
Yeah, I'll cover a couple of other ideas that may be helpful for the audience to basically be prepared with as we talk about. I think we're going to definitely cover some case studies and some of these gaps that we found. And the important thing is to realize this is actually less difficult than you think, because it's a very slight process change compared to really uplifting, having to really, you need to understand everything about the source code or anything But you as coordinators actually don't need to do much more than ask 2-3 questions at the very early stages of the discovery phase and the connecting phase with the researcher to kick off this whole thing. And the other side is awareness of the deployment. Many, many pieces, the very big ones that we're talking about, AMDs, NVIDIAs, who invested a lot in PCERTs, have a tough time understanding how this gets basically packaged and delivered. That's another awareness. It's not that difficult to be aware of. It just is a small knowledge gap that they could be unaware of. So the thing I want to say is there is lots of lessons learned, but most of what we are asking people to do are not that difficult, as far as they're not technologically huge lifts. They're not like big forklifts of system change. Small shovels can help really to really kind of like prepare the way and prepare the coordinators to be aware of the modes in which understand software enough, not really to the extent every language and everything has to be known by the coordinator to be able to patch it himself, but understand these modes in which it gets delivered and it comes in. It's really most important thing we want to leave with them.
Yeah, and just to drive Vijay's point home, I didn't know much about SDLang at all when we had first gotten the report in. But through kind of my own research, talking with the reporters, we had kind of, discovered a new role in the process that we ended up getting disclosed, and that one was ended up getting fixed. We brought up and had a discussion kind of with the maintainers, or worked on trying to get a discussion with the maintainers, which ended up turning to the open source community handling the issue. But overall, the total effort was not the momentous lift that people may take away or may think that they may have to take upon themselves in order to solve kind of the issues. There are many different tools and methods that you can implement to make it like less of a lift, but the impact that you'll have taking on this little bit of extra will be that much more and solve a lot of the kind of systemic issues that are facing kind of the CBD process as a whole.
Looking forward to the community coming together, learning about what your research is and what the recommended changes and tweaks they can make in their processes are, and that dialogue can start about how we can make things better in the future. So thank you very much, Vijay. Christopher, thanks very much for joining us on the podcast. I look forward to hearing more about the presentation.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris.
You've been listening to the First Impressions podcast, the official podcast of the FIRST Conference. The upcoming FIRST Conference is taking place in Denver, Colorado between June 14th and 19th. Looking forward to seeing you there.